Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio, creating waves of awareness over the airwaves, via the internet, and by friends telling friends they care, working in unity to promote homeopathy around the globe. Every Sunday through Thursday, join us for a personal tour of Who's Reading the Organon, a show hosted by HWC founder and homeopath Debbie Brook. She invites you to comment and call in to contribute your thoughts as we complete reading Samuel Hahnemann's Organon. Let's go!
Hi, I'm Debbie Brook, founder of Homeopathy World Community, and we're taking time out in the day to begin with a little bit of inspiration to talk a lot about some current events and to read the words of Dr. Samuel Hahnemann in his Organon of Medicine. Today is September 26th, and you're listening to show number 100. This is a milestone, and I thank everyone for joining me today. Please don't forget, when you get on the Blog Talk Radio, Who's Reading the Organon website, click to listen, to friend, favorite, and comment. You can listen to the old shows and download them to your computer, iTunes, or iPod. The inspiration today comes from Dr. Joyce Knudsen. From an unknown author has said, "Give not from the top of your purse, but from the bottom of your heart." I thought that was quite touching, and I'm going to go straight into some news that's happening around the world, and most especially in the U.S. It seems that there's a story about drugs, a drug recall, and it's not the typical kind of drug recall that you think of. This one is sort of like, I feel like giving it a title, the lethal loaded gun in your house. And you know that the police and crime detectives, they call in to have people bring the guns that they have been collecting at home to protect the homeowners and the dwellers of those homes from accidentally shooting them off by collecting them and not letting them get out into the criminal world. Well, now it's the same thing for the drugs that have been collecting in people's homes. From Maine to Florida, police and crime enforcement officers have been dealing with an increase in prescription drug crime. And this means, you won't believe it, criminals are posing as potential home buyers and they attend open houses. Then they go in the home and they steal the drugs from the medicine cabinets. In addition, home invasions, robberies, assaults, homicides, and thefts are all kinds of crimes that are being linked to prescription drugs. So you've heard of the police gun buyback programs. Now it is drug buyback days when people clean out their shelves from their, quote, legal opiate painkillers, opiates, like pills like Oxycontin, Vicodin, Percocet, Xanax. So you remember when we talked about the aphorisms and Hahnemann spoke continuously about opium and what it does to the human being? Well, people are starting to realize that those are really strong drugs and you can't just have them lying around in your home, and they're now being kind of illegally a criminal active by people who want to sell them by first stealing them from your home. And it's really getting out of hand. I think we have become a nation of addicts. Here's a statistic that you can take with you to your next meeting. In 17 states, deaths from drugs, both prescription and illegal, now exceed those from motorcycle vehicle accidents, with the opiate painkillers playing a leading role. The number of people seeking treatment for painkiller addiction jumped 400% from the years 1998 to 2008. I have no idea what it is now 2 years later. And this is statistic according to the Federal Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration. And, you know, whenever we get these statistics, we don't really have an exact number, and very often a lot of it is not recorded or reported. So sometimes it's underreported. In addition to the fact that all of this criminal behavior is going on and that people are addicted to drugs, there's also another good reason for doing this Buy Back Drug Day because of the environmental impact that is incurred from people who flush their drugs down the commode. And when they do that, it goes into the environment and poisons and pollutes and contaminates our waterways. So it's a good way for the environmental impact to be reduced by people handing in their drugs. Another story has to do with the drug Avandia. The FDA and the government, led by Obama, is now very, very concerned in getting on top of the question about how is the FDA regulating and monitoring and maintaining the way that drugs are put to market? How is medicine practiced today? And so the FDA is now going to get stricter in what they do. In an unbelievable situation, both Europe and the United States are on the same page when it comes to the diabetes medicine Avandia, which has been in use for a decade to reduce blood sugar levels. And that's supposedly supposed to help people control their diabetes. The one thing that they forgot to mention about the drug Avandia are the side effects. So Obama is targeting the efficiency of the FDA on screening the drugs, getting them to market, regulating them, and asking the FDA to proactively pull back on dangerous drugs. They are now required to post the lawsuits. So that's concerning the manufacturers of these drugs. They're now required to post the lawsuits that are against the drugs that they are manufacturing on their website. And the numbers are staggering. And how they got away with selling Avandia for 10 years is beyond belief. One study estimated that from 1999 to the year 2009, more than 47,000 people taking Avandia suffered a heart attack, a stroke, or heart failure, or even died. The decision on Avandia signals a brand new era in the treatment of diabetes, a disease that is now reaching epidemic proportions in much of the industrialized world. It's not just the United States, it's all over. And we know that diabetes is also linked to the epidemic of obesity and the fact that we're eating too much sugar and we're not eating the correct kinds of foods. But because of Avandia, the FDA has announced that in 2008 it would no longer approve medicine simply because they help diabetics control their blood sugar. This is good news. It signals a change in the way that drugs will be pushed to market. And now drug manufacturers must conduct trials that last 2 years, at least 2 years, to show that their medicines do not hurt the heart and that they improve the quality or length of the diabetic's life, which is much tougher kinds of tests than were going on before. Now, this drug Avandia by GlaxoSmithKline, they also had another drug called Rizulin, which that one was withdrawn at the very beginning because it caused liver damage. It's a good thing. And the Senate investigators found that in 1999, GlaxoSmithKline investigated the drug's harmful effects upon the heart without informing anyone of the news. And then they spent 11 years covering up the information that they found out from their investigation. In July, GlaxoSmithKline took a $2.3 billion $2.3 billion liability charge related to legal cases involving Avandia and other medicine. In 2004, they had hid the data that showed that the antidepressant Paxil led children and teenagers to have more suicidal thoughts and behavior. And the company settled a lawsuit by agreeing to publicly post data from all of its trials, which means that it hasn't been publishing the information that it had within its purview. In 2007, Congress mandated that they provide these disclosures, but the postings, they say, are often little more than cryptic references. And so we have not solved this, I would call it almost, I don't want to say criminal, but it's pretty underhanded for them to hide the information that they have if they know it's going to cause harm to individuals taking these drugs. My question is, what will happen to the 600,000 people who are currently taking Avandia in the United States alone? And what will they do instead of taking these drugs to lower their blood sugar levels and to get their diabetes under control? You will be able to read both of those articles on the New York Times. I will provide the link for you when I write the blog. Okay. On the network, we have lots of new articles being posted just about every single day. I want to thank everyone for getting in there, discussing, commenting, rating the photographs and the videos, being involved in the network, in the social community, being respectful of other people and their points of view, and just being an active member of the community. We have a new article by Kaviraj talking about organic gardening. This is really great because we know that we want to reduce our insecticide, pesticide usage by using organic gardening, companion planting, and things like that. And, okay, also Marilyn Friedman had written a little story about being connected in the social world, in your community, attending conferences, and learning a little bit about using the social networks. She has quite a few comments there, and you know that HWC is a social media community where we talk to each other and share and learn and educate. And if anybody happens to know anything about caring for parakeets, especially having a bad vent, there's Albert Amana is looking for some information on caring for the pet birds in his home. Okay, now we're going to move on to our readings. And we were up to aphorism number, we're going to just move on to aphorism number 81 today. And if I have to backtrack and do 80 the next time, that's okay too. Aphorism number 81 states, "The fact that this extremely ancient infecting agent has gradually passed in some hundreds of generations through many millions of human organisms and has thus attained an incredible development renders it in some measure conceivable how it can now display such innumerable morbid forms in the great family of mankind, particularly when we consider what a number of circumstances contribute to the production of these great varieties of chronic diseases, which are secondary symptoms of SORA. Beside the indescribable diversity of men in respect of their congenital corporeal constitutions, so that it is no wonder if such a variety of injurious agencies acting from within and from without, sometimes continually, on such a variety of organisms permeated with the soric miasm should produce innumerable variety of defects, injuries, derangements, and sufferings which have hitherto been treated of in the old pathological works under a number of special names as diseases of an independent character." So if we break this down a little bit before we go ahead into the, he's got footnotes, two footnotes here. He's talking about SORA, about it being an ancient infecting agent, and that it's passed from generation to generation, which sounds a lot like heredity. It sounds a lot like each family passing down particular genes or particular DNA, but he's saying it's maybe a particular organ weakness. He's saying that we've got a miasm that is this background that we bring into the world. It doesn't have to show itself. You could be born into a wholesome family, eating wholesome, nutritious foods, having a good lifestyle, being hardy stock, getting out there in the sun, doing exercise, getting rest, having good social interactions, because we know that reduced stress and living well and having a good community, all of these things play a part in your coping mechanisms, mind, body, and spirit, and how well you do in your health and your mission in life, and how well you fulfill it. And he's saying that these extremely ancient infecting agents are passed down through millions of human organisms. So this is not a one-generation thing. This is something that's come from way back, and it has attained incredible development. It renders it in some measure conceivable how it can now display such innumerable morbid forms in the great family of mankind. So all around the earth, we're going to find this root, this infecting agent, which came from way, way, way back, and it's going to show itself in many, many different forms, whether it's one we give it a name, one type of disease or one set of symptoms, whether it's on the skin or internally and affecting certain organs, and how it displays itself, whether it's inflammation, whether it's an eruption, whether it's a growth, all of these things, how it displays itself and how it contributes to the pain and suffering of mankind. And he says we contribute to the production of these great varieties of chronic diseases, meaning they're long-term. They're not an acute disease that just comes and goes. It's a chronic disease that hangs on with a person during their lifetime. And the secondary symptoms of SORA, he's saying, that's the SORA is the infecting agent, and then the secondary symptoms are this disease that shows in the diversity of mankind in all different ways in congenital corporeal constitutions. So that's your genetic pool, maybe. And it's no wonder that there's such a variety of injurious agencies acting. And he says the reason that it's taken so many different forms is because we're all different. Our cultures and communities are all different. We eat all different types of foods, and we live in different parts of the world, whether you're living in a tropical area, a dry desert, a plain, mountainous. You're living in all different areas with different environments that impact your growth and development from without and also from within. What is it that you bring through your heredity? And that's why he's explaining how it could form so many different diseases. And here it says, he says that the variety of organisms permeated with the soric miasm should produce an innumerable variety of defects, injuries, derangements, and sufferings, which have been previously treated in the old pathological works. And he's got some footnotes here under the names of special names. And so over time, physicians have grouped these types of symptoms and given them a name. And that's why we have a named disease. Now we're going to go to the footnote, footnote number 78. It comes from where he says, particularly when we consider what a number of circumstances contribute to the production of these great varieties of illness. So here we have, okay, I see there's a caller. I don't know who's calling in. I'm going to open up the line. Hello. I see that there's a caller in, and
yeah,
I don't recognize.
Me?
Ah, I don't know your number, and I didn't know. Okay, because I heard a message earlier that you weren't able to call in.
Yeah.
I'm glad you are. Okay, so we're saying hello to Marilyn again, who's been my partner lately over the past couple of weeks. She's been calling in regularly. Were you able to listen to the show, Marilyn?
Yeah, I was able to listen to you.
Okay, so right now we're up to the aphorism number 81 on the footnote, the first footnote.
You're on the second footnote.
The very first one, it says, some of these causes.
Yes.
If you're with me and you have it in front of you, you could. I would like it if you would read it.
Okay, Debbie. So some of these causes that exercise a modifying influence on the transformation of psora into chronic diseases manifestly depend sometimes on the climate and the peculiar physical character of the place of abode, sometimes on the very great varieties in the physical and mental training of youth, both of which may have been neglected, delayed, or carried to excess, or on their abuse in the business or conditions of life, in the matter of diet and regimen, passions, manners, habits, and customs of various kinds.
Do you have something to say in regard to that footnote?
Well, it's very self-explanatory, isn't it? In other words, it's not so much our gene pool as how we live our life that could determine how we get sick and what kind of sicknesses we get.
Mm-hmm. Right. And so he's giving us specific words, though. He's saying that this, I mentioned about the climate. So, you know, if you're living in South America, it's going to affect your diet. It's going to affect what foods are available to you and how your body develops by taking in those certain kinds of foods and living in a warm, rainy, you know, if you're living in the rainforest, a rainy, humid climate, whether you're eating hot peppers and hot foods, whether you're outdoors a lot, that kind of thing, whether you have to deal with fungal growth or, oh my gosh, the majority of variety of plants are living in the rainforests, whether your air is clean, whether you get rain every day, and how you, the kind of routine you carry on in your day. But then he says, so he's talking about the physical characteristics of the place of your home and your home environment, but then he also has something in here about the physical and mental training of the youth. So this is education, your upbringing, your morals, your values. It's how your social interactions are. It, you know, we recognize that teen years are so difficult to get through, whether there's cliques or there's competition, how you relate and react to your peers. And also, specifically in previous aphorism, he's mentioned that for females, the change that comes over them during their menstruation, and that can initiate the psora to show itself for the very first time. Today, having cramps or dysmenorrhea or amenorrhea or whatever problems that you have during menstruation, it's going to indicate something about how the psora manifests itself.
You know, I also wanted to add, Debbie, that Hahnemann was the first physician who really talked about public health.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're talking about, and I know that I don't remember which aphorism it is, but he talks about in the Organon how if somebody's living in, you know, if somebody's sick, they have respiratory conditions, and they're living in a damp cellar, then, mm-hmm. you know, they have to come out of that damp cellar in order to get healthy. So
right.
It's as though, you know, this footnote is a reiteration of what he's been saying throughout the Organon.
Right. And this is in the same group of aphorisms that we've been talking about recently, because I think it's probably been about two, maybe aphorism number 78 or 79 that he spoke about the damp cellar and the living conditions. So in a way, what he's doing is he's summarizing. He prepared us with the specifics in the earlier aphorism of this grouping, and now he's tying it all together. He's saying, remember we spoke about that, and now we're seeing how it's related to Sora, how it can be, Sora can be so, he was asking, he said thousands of different manifestations of Sora, and now he's explaining it, that people are living in different ways and in groups and communities and environments. And also, he says here, which may be neglected, delayed, or carried to excess. So he's talking about now the guidance, how we bring up our children. So he's a real ahead of his time in just about everything, about how he describes health, how he describes medicine, how he describes public health, caring for the sick, and how conditions that relate to contribute to illness. And now he's talking actually about education. How does a parent or a community educate and bring up their children? Do they neglect their kids? Today this is too prevalent that there are latchkey, what is it called? Just the parents gone to work.
Latchkey kids.
Latchkey kids, and they just leave the kids at home and they go to work and the kids have to fend for themselves. And that's not typically how humans care for their children.
Debbie?
Go ahead.
Mm-hmm. You reminded me. I was just having a conversation the other day about, babies. If you put little children in front of the television, they are totally mesmerized. There's so much going on, and they're watching so many things in a fast motion. And then you put them in a school atmosphere and, they have to sit at a desk and they have to watch the teacher. They're looking at one person. And then by grade mm-hmm. three, they're assessed with something like, attention deficit.
Mm-hmm.
So, I think if Hahnemann were alive today, he would say to us, specifically, children should not be watching television. Don't think that television should be your baby's babysitter. Take the child out. Mm-hmm. Let the child go play outside.
Right. Get in the sandbox.
Yeah, exactly.
Go to the park.
Exactly.
Right. Well, you know what? That's perfect, because this week has been TV turnoff week. So we have an initiative to go in that direction, but people, we're all addicted and it's hard to withdraw from it. This is great, and I think since there's only 1 minute left, I thank you so much for calling in and contributing your thoughts, Marilyn. Tomorrow we're going to continue with the same aphorism number 81 and the next footnote. There's actually more to read about in this. So we have a lot to learn, and I hope that you share with your friends Blog Talk Radio, Who's Reading the Organon, to learn more about current events, inspiration, and especially the inspiration we get from Dr. Samuel Hahnemann in reading his Organon of Medicine. Thank you so much for listening, and see you tomorrow, Marilyn.
Thanks, Debbie. See you tomorrow. Bye, everybody. And I just want to say happy birthday, Norman, to my husband who's listening today.
Oh, wow. That was nice. Happy birthday, Norman. Have some... I was going to say cake. Yeah, once a year. Why not? Cake and ice cream.
Bye.
Okay, bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Who's Reading the Organon with homeopath Debbie Brook on Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio. Remember to take the Organon off the shelf and read it.